It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, it's our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer.
First, yesterday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention confirmed the first case of Ebola in the United States. While CDC officials have said they have plans in place to isolate and treat any Ebola patients in the U.S., our next guest says the announcement is likely to cause a good deal of worry, maybe panic around the country.
However, he says the case brings up some ethical questions that need to be talked about in a calm and productive way.
Joining us now is Arthur Kaplan. He's the director of the Division of Medical Ethics at the New York University Langone Medical Center. Arthur, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, you say that people are going to feel a fair amount of panic surrounding this announcement. I mean, do we have good cause to be worried, if not panicked?
We don't have any reason to be panicked. I think there's reason to pay attention. I don't expect that a lot of folks are going to intersect Ebola. There are many other health things, health problems, just the ordinary flu, for example. We're just entering flu season. They're going to pose more challenges. But you want to make sure that people understand exactly what's happening with that patient in Dallas. You want the details, not the names or the addresses. I think that's wrong to give any of that out. But here's what happened. Here's how we're tracking it. Here's how we're dealing with it. This is where they went. This is who they contacted. This is who we're tracing. You need that story because you got to make sure people trust that you're really on top of this.
And you've written a piece that appeared in Forbes called Five Ethical Points Now That Ebola Has Entered the U.S., and that actually was one of your points. You're looking for clear and transparent communication from the CDC and other public health officials. Why is that so important?
I think the CDC attitude and some of the health officials in Texas has been, we're on it, trust us, we are taking this very seriously, and the boots are on the ground. But I think a lot of folks are a little bit skeptical. Maybe some, maybe not a lot, but some are skeptical, and they are going to say, you know, maybe you're not telling us all the truth, or maybe you're covering something up. So I think the way you cement that trust is you get as transparent as possible. You don't say, we can't give you any details because of privacy. What you do say is, we're not going to give any names, we're not going to give you any addresses, we're not going to give you anything that would disclose where these people are. But we can tell you the story of what we're doing, and then you'll buy in and see, yeah, you really are on top of this.
Now, on one practical level, there have been, one instant reaction sometimes is, let's close down travel from the countries affected by Ebola. You don't buy that. What are you looking for instead?
So I don't think that makes much sense, partly because boats and planes can get here from other countries. We're not going to shut down all travel that is going to come here, and people from Africa can come the long way around and still get here pretty quickly. So I don't think you're going to see a complete air traffic shutdown. What you could see is some advice, for example, what I haven't seen yet for passengers. If you see someone who's sick or sweaty or throwing up on the plane, it might be important to know who to say something to. I fully support that. I think that's prudent. Better screening. We should make sure that before you get on the plane, you get asked a series of questions about symptoms. When you get off the plane, you should be asked a series of questions about symptoms and where you've been and what countries you've been through and all that. Much more aggressive. We did it a little bit, if you remember, for pandemic flu. We should be doing it much more aggressively for Ebola.
Now, this first case in Texas was detected in a hospital after a first try where the patient evidently was sent home. Are local hospitals around the country knowing what to look out for and what to do if there's a possible case of Ebola?
Can't answer that, and that's another problem. I think the public should know not only what are they doing at the CDC, which is great, but what's happening in Milwaukee? What's actually happening in hospitals all around the country? Is your local hospital ready to deal with an Ebola patient? If an Ebola patient wound up visiting someone in Wisconsin and became very sick, should they be taken to the Mayo Clinic? Should they go to someplace in Atlanta? Or can the local facility absolutely isolate them and handle that situation? We haven't heard about training of the hospitals. We haven't heard about the admission priorities of hospitals. We ought to know that. So I'm not happy with that public communication either.
Are hospitals ready to deal with a lot of people seeing these stories in the media, getting worried that the cold or mild flu might be Ebola and flooding urgent care centers, emergency rooms?
Yeah, that's a great question. It really worries me. So where we are right now, start of October, is the beginning of the flu season. Most people hear that the early symptoms of Ebola are flu-like symptoms. They may not be paying attention to the fact that you don't have to worry too much about this if you haven't been in Western Africa or you haven't been taking care of someone with Ebola. They just hear flu-like symptoms and off they go. So no, I don't think, again, we're doing enough communication to say, yeah, you want to watch for those flu-like symptoms if you've been exposed to someone because you're trying to take care of them. That's usually a healthcare worker, or you've traveled. I worry at the start of the flu season that we're also not saying, hey, this is really the year to get the flu shot because you might as well weed yourself out of that set of symptoms so you don't overwhelm the system even further. You know, the ERs during flu season are jammed. And if we have more people trying to get in there because they have false fears about Ebola, it's really going to make a mess.
Getting back to your recommendations, you see we need to clarify the rights of families to dictate disposal of bodies should there be a death related to Ebola. Why is that important?
If you looked at the terrible epidemic in West Africa, it's clear that the reason it has spread far is that they have not handled dead bodies in ways that would prevent transmission of the disease. It's not that people are giving each other the disease through fluid contact, although certainly some have, but they have a dead body that's still infectious. It's got a lot of virus still in it, and they caress the body, and they wrap the body, and they bathe the body, and they kiss the body, and that's where trouble starts. You can't deal with dead bodies that way if they die of Ebola. You're going to have to pretty much get them isolated and then cremate them. So I don't think we're going to have a lot of choices if someone dies here and they say religiously or culturally, I want to have this kind of funeral or I want to do this or that. That can't happen, and we might as well say that clearly now.
So this is a case where on the ethics side, the balance should be public safety over a religious or cultural freedom.
Exactly.
And then finally, and obviously when we talk the healthcare system in the United States, cost always comes up. Have we talked about how we're going to pay for Ebola screening, Ebola treatment, should it become more necessary?
We haven't, and that's another problem, and here's why. Let's say you were someone who was a visitor here, and you got sick, and you're thinking, I don't know if they're going to pay for my care, and I don't want to burden my family that's here or my relatives. I'll just stay home until I'm really sure that I'm sick. You don't want to do that. You don't want people who are here illegally and somehow get exposed not to go into the hospital. You want everybody to go to the hospital if they really show these severe signs of vomiting and diarrhea and the inability to walk and so forth, and they've been in places where Ebola has been. So we better make it clear that we're happy to take care of everybody, no matter whether they're insured or they're not insured, because the worst thing you can do is mimic what we've seen in Western Africa, which is people staying at home, dying at home, and infecting their families.
Now, big picture, you've pointed out a lot of flaws in communication, in part, in decisions that are as yet unmade. By and large, our public health system, do you think it's ready for a threat like Ebola, that it won't spread as quickly as it did, as you mentioned, in those West African countries?
It's far more ready than those West African countries, but it's not where it should be. We don't have good outreach into the hospitals to make sure that every resident knows that when you take a history from someone with flu-like symptoms, you want to ask them where they've traveled. We don't really have a tough, aggressive public health system that can do surveillance accurately of what's going on. We've chopped the budget up and cut back. It isn't where it should be. And a lesson just down the road, whether it's Ebola or tuberculosis or some other disease that's highly infectious, we got to beef that public health system back up. We're in a small world and things move quick, and we can't get by with a public health system that sort of ends at our borders.
Arthur, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure.
That's Arthur Kaplan. He's director of the Division of Medical Ethics at the New York University Langone Medical Center. He joins us to talk about the first case of Ebola diagnosed in the U.S. and the ethical points that, and some practical ones, too, that need to be discussed going forward.